Now, who remembers anything from my talk yesterday afternoon? Raise your hand if you remember something. Because this is one of the most difficult questions. Trying to remember something from a day before. Yes, Mahaprabhu started his pilgrimage. Yes, who remembers anything from how Mahaprabhu did his pilgrimage, or some of the principles of pilgrimage? Yeah, Yagya Purusha. Yes, that wasn't from that pilgrimage, but yes, very, very, very simply. What is the purpose of living simply? Or what are the purposes, or what are some purposes for living simply? Gopa Kumar? Excuse me? Yes, to become dependent, to accept, realize, and act on our dependence, our actual situation of dependence on Krishna. And also, simple living frees our mind from the complexities of life. Even though simple living may take more time in some senses than the time required when we use modern facilities, simple living to walk from Jagannath Puri to Vrindavan, it certainly takes more time, but the complexities the mind is so engaged always in the complexities of modern materialistic civilization, and there's no time, practically speaking, mental time. Even though we may even have the physical time, we don't have the mind to think deeply. What to speak of devotionally, which is the deepest of the deepest of thoughts. Thank you. What else on pilgrimage? If
he was yearning so much for Vrindavan that right from the beginning of his journey, every day he could see everything as well.
Yes. He was just seeing Vrindavan everywhere, just thinking Vrindavan, Vrindavan, Vrindavan. And as Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami Maharaj said, that Mahaprabhu was so ecstatic and so absorbed in the mood of Vrindavan that regardless of where he was, just the mention of the word Vrindavan would cast him into ecstasy. And then when he actually arrived in Vrindavan, his ecstasy increased tens of millions of times. Ecstasy means not just the external manifestations, tears and trembling of the body or falling to the ground, but ecstasy means that there is an internal, something going on very deeply, internally, positively, and in Krishna consciousness it means that our relationship, our love for Krishna is awakening. It is increasing. It is stimulated. Udipan. It is stimulated. The land of Vrindavan stimulates one's love for Krishna. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was already completely melted in love for Krishna. And when he wandered around the forests of Vrindavan, his ecstasy increased and increased and increased. And due to the crowds in Mathura, he decided to stay where? Akuragat. Yes, Akuratirtha. Now, there are 11 verses that we're going to base our classes on, our presentation on, which describe Mahaprabhu's activities when he was in the town of Vrindavan, where he would walk every day from Akura Tirtha. And we'll describe these places, and that's going to basically be the substance of the class. We're going to describe the places and what happened there. Maybe divide them into small groups. Please take one. And one more. And please bring these every day, because I'd like to chant these verses every day. It's interesting how the verses themselves are quite simple, but in the simple verses, there is unlimited depth of meaning. And we will try to enter into some of the meanings according to our perhaps small capacity. So raise your hand if you don't have a sheet yet. Okay. Krishna willing, there'll be enough. And obviously if there isn't quite enough, we'll have to look on with others.
12 slokas.
Okay, everyone. Seeing a great crowd assembled at Mathura, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left and went to Akura Tirtha. He remained there in a solitary place.
Dina Aila Prabhu Dekhite Vrindavan.
Kali Arade Snan Koila Ara Prashvandana.
The next day, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Vrindavan and he took his bath at Kaliya Lake and Praskananda.
Dvadashaditya hoite keshi tirte aila.
Dvadashaditya hoite keshi tirte aila.
Rashasthali dekhi preme murchita hoila.
After seeing the holy place called Praskananda, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Dvadaditya. From there, he went to Keshi Tirtha. And when he saw the place where the rasa dance had taken place, he immediately lost consciousness due to ecstatic love.
Chetana pana hapuna gada gadiya.
Chetana pana hapuna gada gadiya.
Hashe kande nache pode uche shorega.
Hashe kande nache pode uche shorega.
When the Lord regained his senses, he began to roll on the ground. He would sometimes laugh, cry, dance, and fall down. He would also chant very loudly. Being thus transcendentally amused, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu passed that day happily at Keshi Tirtha. In the evening, he returned to Akura Tirtha, where he took his meal.
Prate Vrindavane Koila Chira Ghate Sna.
Korila Vishram.
The next morning, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu returned to Vrindavan and took in his bath at Chirgat. He then went to Tantuli Tal, Imli Tal, where he took rest.
Krishna Lila Kale Rashe Vriksha Purata.
Krishna Lila Kale Rashe Vriksha Purata.
Taratale Pindi Bandha Paramachika.
The tamarind tree named Tantuli Tal was very old, having been there since the time of Lord Krishna's pastimes. Beneath the tree was a very shiny platform.
Nikate Yamuna Vahe Shitala Shami.
Vrindavane Shobha Dekhe Yamuna Rini.
Since the river Yamuna flowed near Tantuli Tal, a very cool breeze blew there. And while there, the Lord saw the beauty of Vrindavan and the water of the river Yamuna. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to sit beneath the old tamarind tree and chant the holy name of the Lord. At noon, he would return to Akrura Tirtha to take lunch. All the people who lived near Akrura Tirtha came to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and due to the large crowds, the Lord could not peacefully chant the holy name.
Vrindavane Ashi Prabhu Vashiya
Ekan.
Namashankirtana Kore Madhyana Parya.
Namashankirtana Kore Madhyana
Parya. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would go to Vrindavan and sit in a solitary place where he would chant the holy name until noon.
Tritiya prahare loka paya darshan.
Tritiya prahare loka paya darshan.
Shobare upadesh kore naam sankirtan.
Shobare upadesh kore.
In the afternoon, people were able to speak to him, and the Lord told everyone of the importance of chanting the holy name. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai. Sri Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami Maharaj ki jai. Om Ajnanatimanandasya Janajana Salakaya Chaksu Samilitan Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Nama. Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Rupakadamayam Vedati Sa Pandantikam. Vansha Kalpatubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayibhacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. As we mentioned yesterday, our pilgrimages tend to be frenzied like the rest of our lives, trying to fit unlimited things in. due to the necessities of being alive in Kali Yuga. Very, very difficult, actually. Manda sumanda matayo manda abhagya upadrutaha. Upadrutaha, in speaking of the symptoms of Kali Yuga, it means that everyone is, the prime characteristic is everyone's mind is always disturbed. And it's very difficult to do something simple. To do something simple is very difficult because there is so much stimulation. This is what Kali Yuga offers, so much stimulation. And it's actually quite demonic in its presentation. It's conscious that the masses of people are given so much sensuous stimulation so that they become, practically speaking, mindless masses. As if one can watch, think of how many television stations exist in your hometown, wherever it is. There's hundreds, even in New Zealand. New Zealand? Anyone from New Zealand? Little New Zealand that has 3 million people. It has probably 100 TV stations in Auckland. So people are continuously stimulated, and then there's the internet and the bad news and this and that and the mobile phones which allow you to be disturbed at any time in any place. There is no privacy. There is no time, practically speaking, for deeply thinking about what the purpose of life is. And pilgrimage is supposed to be something completely different from that. And we tend, of course, to take all that with us when we come on pilgrimage. How can we escape from it? It is so much a part of who we are at this point in time, in our lives, and this point in civilization. This is who we are. We're all disturbed, practically speaking, by all the so-called responsibilities of life and on and on and on, and all our desires increasing. But for pilgrimage to work, all that stops. And one, if one wants to take the fast route, one walks. It's easier that way. So Mahaprabhu, feeling so much ecstasy being in Vrindavan, had a very specific desire. The purpose, the internal purposes of his being, coming to this world externally, not to minimize his purpose of spreading the Yuga Dharma, of chanting Krishna's names, but his personal, internal purpose was to experience, to taste, to know that mysterious love of the residents of Vrindavan, which causes even Krishna to become bewildered. The all-knowing Sarvagya, Sarashwarya Purnam, all opulent, supreme personality of Godhead, actually, the all-powerful one becomes bewildered in the presence of the love of his greatest devotees, the residents of Vrindavan. This is inconceivable. And Mahaprabhu, being Radha Krishna Nahi Anya, being Krishna in the mood of Srimati Radharani, he wanted, he himself, Krishna wanted to experience, not by holding on to the mood, but by completely adopting the mood of Srimati Radharani and the residents of Vrindavan. He wanted to taste that specific, unlimitedly sweet ecstasy. The concept of Krishna, of God, is inconceivable. How can we conceive of someone who is unlimitedly beautiful? Just
think of what that means. Unlimitedly beautiful, not beautiful, not more beautiful, not most beautiful, but unlimitedly beautiful. There is no end to the extent of his beauty. No wonder he is all attractive. There is no end to the extent of his power, his strength. One universe created, two universes created, unlimited universes created, and his potency, his strength doesn't diminish in the slightest bit. We should understand, or knowledge, knowing everything, that's nothing for him. But yet, we want to get some concept in our mind at this moment. I would like everyone to of what the absolute, what it means that who Krishna is. Because when we hear of the simple activities that he's going to perform in Vrindavan, it was the names of places, practically speaking, and a few activities. He sat at a shiny platform here. He rolled in the dust there. For a person who has no tattva vibhrama, who doesn't have transcendental knowledge, it appears superficial, but as is usually the case, what appears to us is just a product of our mind. So if we see superficiality, it means it indicates our own superficiality. If we see love and ecstasy, that indicates the depth of our own Krishna consciousness. But the power of Chaitanya Charitamrita, the power of Mahaprabhu's pastimes, the power of Krishna's Leela, the power of Vrindavan, the power of the association of devotees, is that the power of Giriraj Govardhan is that perhaps by the mercy of those, combined mercy of those items, we may be able to get a glimpse, albeit from a far distance, we can get a glimpse of what Krishna Leela is actually like, what Vrindavan is actually like. If we can get a glimpse of the dealings between Krishna and the residents of Vrindavan, we are so fortunate, because that glimpse, that speck, that grain of brush dust will stay in our heart until it carries us back to Goloka Vrindavan. That taste is the most wonderful thing. And we want to get that taste. Not in a sentimental, cheap way, but if we get that taste, it will carry us home to the lotus feet of Krishna. So Mahaprabhu, first, interestingly enough, he didn't want the crowds. Why didn't he want the crowds? In Mathura, later on, we heard that when the crowds came in the afternoon, that was okay. He was ready to talk to everyone. But he wanted the early mornings for his own internal experience. He wanted to taste something. So he stayed, he moved from Mathura. Seeing a great crowd assemble at Mathura, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left, and he went to Akura Tirtha, which is not midway between Mathura and Vrindavan, but perhaps two-thirds of the way from Mathura to Vrindavan. It is quite close to Vrindavan. Raise your hand if you've been to Akura Tirtha. Yes, so many devotees. How wonderful. It's a very secluded place. Right now, the Yamuna does not flow directly by the place where Mahaprabhu stayed, but there's a temple and there's a tree and they're just building it and increasing it. But very close to there, if one continues down the road, one will get to the Yamuna River over there. And Mahaprabhu stayed there. And he wanted to be in a solitary mood there, because he was about, from there he would enter into Vrindavan and he would come back every night. He would enter into the most sacred forest of Vrindavan, the place that is managed, so to speak, by Vrindadevi, the Vrindavan forest, where Krishna performs his most intimate pastimes, the most intimate pastimes, rasa lila, so many pastimes that perform in Vrindavan. Of course, we say Vrindavan, meaning all of Braja, but this specifically, Krishna is entering into the forest of Vrindavan from Mathura. He's visited all the other forests, the 12 forests of Vrindavan. He's visited all but Vrindavan itself. And there, he's visited Radhakund even, which is technically in Vrindavan forest, because the Vrindavan forest technically goes from the town of Vrindavan to Govardhan, onward to Nandagaon, which includes Barsana, which includes also Radhakund. But he stayed just at the border. We have a tendency, myself included, to want to get as close as possible physically. We want to be right in front of the deities. We want to be right there. But, of course, we know that the closeness, more than anything else, is a matter of consciousness. And that's really the issue. If we want to be close, we have to be close in consciousness. And close in consciousness means very close in desire to serve. Close in desire to serve means at least the blossoming of love. So Mahaprabhu went to a Kuratirtha and he remained there in a solitary place. Now, there is a town near Akuratirtha called Bartrol. And there, has anyone been to Bartrol? Yes. What happened there? What happened there? Yes, Bartrol is the village that the wives of the brahmanas, and the Brahmins too, they were performing a sacrifice. When the coward boys and Krishna were wandering in the forests, great herding their cows, and Krishna wanted to do some preaching, but he also wanted to show some special mercy to some very dear devotees. These wives, the Dvijapatnis, the wives of the Brahmins. So he sent the coward boys who said that they were hungry. They said, "Oh, Krishna, we've been herding the cows all morning. We're so hungry." But actually, remember the secret that whatever the residents of Vrindavan do, there is no selfishness. They were not thinking actually of their own hunger. They were thinking, actually, maybe perhaps Krishna is hungry. And this simple indication, spoken indirectly, is really at the essence of spiritual life. And it differentiates the difference between spiritual life and material life. And we can carry it, and we tend to carry this material life into the realm of spiritual life. Just like the coward boys were saying, "Oh Krishna, we're hungry," but what was in their mind was, "Oh Krishna, I fear that you're hungry." I tend to do the exact reverse. I tend to say, "Oh Krishna, are you hungry?" But actually, what I'm thinking is, I'm hungry. This is, one can say, the great secret of spiritual life. It's so simple. We can understand that material life, as Kapila Muni describes in the third canto of Bhagavatam, is simply based on false ego, and false ego means that I am in the center. And the great secret, open secret of spiritual life is to reverse that and place Krishna in the center. What is pleasing to Krishna? What is pleasing to Krishna? That is where bhakti begins. So when the coward boys were sent by Krishna to this village of Bhadral, first to ask the brahmanas who were expert in Vedic rituals, the brahmanas would not even answer them. They wouldn't even acknowledge. They begged in the name of Krishna. Krishna is nearby. Balaram is nearby. Please send some food. They would not even acknowledge their existence. And when Krishna came back and heard the report, he just laughed. He said, it's the nature of begging. You don't always get what you desire. But now, I want you to go to the wives of the Brahmins. Why? Because the wives of the Brahmins were actually devotees. And how did they become devotees? Does anyone know? Huh? They just heard. They were just hearing stories, the pastimes of Krishna, from the people who were wandering, the different flower sellers, etc. They heard the pastimes, the activities of Krishna, and they fell in love with Krishna. This person, this most beautiful person, they fell in love with him. So when the cowherd boys told the ladies that Krishna is nearby, they went into ecstasy. They were stunned. They could not move. They did not move. They did not reply. They did not say anything. And the cowherd boys were surprised. They thought, we can understand that their husbands, the Brahmins, they're not devotees. They didn't acknowledge our existence. They didn't say anything. But these cowherd ladies are also not saying anything. But the difference was great, because one was devotional ecstasy, the other one was arrogance, simply arrogance. So Krishna was fed all the food that was meant for the sacrifice. The cowherd ladies brought it. And what did Krishna do? He entered their hearts through their eyes. They looked at Krishna's beauty. Namidyate haranya paridim manamalya barha. I got it almost right. But they just looked at beautiful Krishna, who was standing there with his elbow on the shoulders of his cowherd boyfriend. They looked at beautiful Krishna, the complexion with the peacock feather in his hair, just so beautiful. And in his left hand, he was twirling a lotus flower. And by that, he was indicating, by your love, my heart is twirling. Or he was indicating, just see what I'm going to do with your heart and make it spin. And indeed it did. So that happened very close to where Mahaprabhu was staying. But just again, it wasn't in Vrindavan, it was on the border. He was staying specifically at Akura Tirtha. And two pastimes happened there at Akura Tirtha. We're familiar with one pastime, but there's a second pastime that happened at Akura Tirtha, and it's very interesting when you put these two pastimes together. What a contrast occurs. So the first pastime, the one that is the Akura Tirtha is named after, is, I'm going to start the pastime near the end, because the beginning of the pastime and the heartbreak of the residents of Vrindavan, we won't tell that now. But Akura was sent by Kamsa. Akura was a devotee, but he was on a mission from Kamsa. He was sent by Kamsa to bring Krishna and Balaram to Mathura for the purpose of Krishna and Balaram being killed. This was Kamsa's plan. And Akura, even though he was a devotee, he took part in this plan. Quite amazing. He had a desire, a burning desire to see Krishna. He came to Vrindavan. He entered Vrindavan from Mathura. His mood was, we'll hear about his mood. It was quite different from the residents of Vrindavan. He came on a big chariot after spending a day in Vrindavan. He took Krishna and Balaram on his chariot towards Mathura. And what we won't speak about is the heartbreak, specifically of the Braja Gopis, the young Gopis. They just cried and cried. They couldn't believe how everyone was so bewildered. The other residents of Vrindavan were so bewildered that they were allowing Akura to take Krishna from Vrindavan. Govinda Damodar Madhaveti. Perhaps we'll discuss that later. But now, Akura had Krishna and Balaram on the chariot. And on the way to Mathura, the three of them stopped at this Akura Tirtha. Because the Yamuna flowed nearby, it was noontime. It was time for Akura to perform his prescribed duty of chanting his Vishnu mantra, because he was a devotee, but a devotee of Lord Vishnu, a devotee of Lord Narayan. So, and he wanted to do that. He wanted to bathe and chant his mantras. So he stopped the chariot. He knew, he had some hints of who Krishna and Balaram were, that they were the supreme. So he stopped there. They were related to him. He was their uncle in the extended family relationship. And Krishna, when he came to the Yamuna on the border between Mathura and Vrindavan, this water was completely effulgent, as effulgent, as brilliant, and as brilliant as jewels. And he took some of the clear water, and from his own palms, his lotus-like palms, Krishna drank the water of the Yamuna. And then Akura took the chariot and placed it under some trees and asked Krishna and Balaram to get on the chariot. He was fearing their lives and he wanted them in a protected situation. He was a devotee. Then he entered into the water of the Yamuna and began to say his Vishnu mantras. And suddenly in the water he saw Krishna and Balaram. He was wondering what the illusion was, whether Krishna and Balaram in the water was an illusion, because he had just left them on the chariot. So he came out of the water and saw that Krishna and Balaram were still on the chariot. So he went back to the water and he began to say his mantras, and then suddenly Krishna and Balaram, still in the water, appeared as Anantashesha. Balaram is Anantashesha, very beautiful, with thousands of hoods and heads and helmets, whitish complexion, bluish garments. And comfortably seated upon Anantashesha was Krishna in the form of Lord Vishnu, fully opulent. And all the demigods were surrounding them, the sages and demigods, and Krishna's potencies, the potencies of Vishnu, internal, external, were surrounding them. and offering prayers. Akura, as you might well imagine, was shocked. His worshipable deity, and he knew this was Krishna and Balaram, his worshipable deity was directly in front of his eyes, Lord Vishnu. And he began to offer prayers. Let us hear, I'll read some of the prayers just to give us a feel of the mood in which he offered these prayers. First he said, I bow down to you, capital U, capital Y, because you are the cause of all causes, the original, the inexhaustible Supreme Person, Narayan. From the whirl of the lotus born from your navel, Brahma appeared, and by his agency, this entire universe has come into existence. This is how we usually think of God. He is the cause of everything, the creator of everything. More details on this. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, and its source, false ego. The Mahatattva, the total material nature, and her source. The Supreme Lord's Purusha expansion. The mind, the senses, the sense objects. This is all information that's presented earlier in the second and the third cantos. All of this, and the senses presiding deities, all these causes of the cosmic manifestation are born from your transcendental body, your unlimited transcendental body. The total material nature and these other elements of creation, they certainly cannot know you as you are. This is actually a very deep statement. And this is why we cannot understand Krishna with our mind and intelligence, which are products of the material energy. The material energy cannot know the source of the material energy. We cannot understand Vrindavan by the power of our own mind or intelligence, no matter how strong or powerful our mind and intelligence is. Bhakti is required for that, because bhakti melts Krishna's heart. Love melts Krishna's heart, and he awards full realization to the devotee by his causeless mercy. The science of evoking Krishna's mercy upon us is the science of bhakti yoga. They are manifested, mind, intelligence, etc., in the realm of dull matter. And since you are beyond material nature, even Lord Brahma, who is bound up in these modes, does not know your true identity. But, regardless of the fact that no one knows who you actually are, he continues, everyone, directly, indirectly, by this method, by that method, they are simply worshipping you, he explains in several other verses of his prayer. The people who are performing sacrifices, the people who are going to temples, the people who are praying in this way, the people who are performing austerities, they are worshipping you, O Lord Narayan, who is the source of everything. Those who are using their intelligence to try to pierce the material nature are trying to find you, he explains. All these people, even those who have turned their attention away from you, Bahimukh, and are worshipping other things, are actually worshipping you alone, because there is nothing external to him. Everything comes from him. As rivers born from the mountains and filled by the rain flow from all sides into the sea, so do all these paths in the end reach you, O Master. So Krishna is the Supreme Lord, the source of everything. And what is it that causes us to be separate from Krishna? Is that also the thing that causes us to be separate? Is that separate from Krishna too? Or is that also under his control? Is there some rebellious devil who has escaped somehow the government of the Lord and is causing a revolution? No, it's not like that at all. Everything, even the Maya, even illusion, comes from Krishna. That which bewilders us is also Krishna's energy. And because it's Krishna's energy, and because he empowers that energy, we cannot overcome it. His potency is empowering it. So he's offering a core offices, obeisances to Krishna, who is the source of the modes. He's the source of the super soul even. And then he explains how everything, almost a description of the universal form, is part of Krishna. The mountains, the fire, the air, the demigods, everything is just simply part of Krishna. All comes from you and all is within you. This is our concept of religion, basically. And he is like this when he's praying like this. Then, I remember one time I went to the in Italy, in Rome, the Sistine Chapel Museum. And there are so many incredible artifacts in there, and pieces of art and sculptures and paintings and intricately woven rugs and this and that. And the mood was summed up to me in one huge carpet on the wall, which almost everything mirrored. There's a great light in the corner, and then there's some very holy person with some effulgence around his head like this, and moving backwards as much as he possibly can from that great and powerful light. The reverence, complete reverence. Part of reverence is fear. This is Akura's mood too. It's filled with reverence, and it is wonderful. And he's accurate. He knows what he is saying, who he is speaking about. And then he explains that all the incarnations, when Krishna comes to this world in so many different forms, that is actually all, they are also coming from him. All the incarnations come from him as well. And then, moving closer, because his prayers have a very, very great structure. Everything comes from you. You are that Supreme Lord. Even though you are a person, Lord Narayan, you are Bhagawan. And even illusion comes from you, and the super soul comes from you. The incarnations come from you. And then he begins speaking as one does at this time, expressing one's own position. I too am deluded, O Almighty Lord. I foolishly think my body, children, home, wife, money, and followers to be real. Although they are as unreal as a dream, they are here and then they are gone. Thus mistaking the temporary for the eternal, and in this sense it's a dream. The temporary, this is the illusion that Maya makes us think, that the temporary is eternal, even though we know, if we apply the smallest amount of intelligence, we know that the temporary is temporary. We know with our intelligence that tomorrow won't necessarily just be like today, that one day it's going to end. But in Maya, we imagine, illusion, we imagine, yes, it's going to go on just in the way it goes on. Day after day, the sun will rise, the sun will set, I don't feel any older. And then suddenly, one time, we go to the doctor and he comes in with a very, very grave face in his best doctorly bedside manner and says, I have some news for you. That's not, please sit down, I want to tell you something. And then suddenly, terror awakens in our heart because it shatters the illusion that we experience ourselves as going to be here forever in this particular form, in this particular situation. It's illusion. And he's saying, Kura is honestly saying, I'm in this illusion. I'm trapped. I'm like a fool who overlooks a body of water covered by vegetation growing in it and chases a mirage. So I have turned away from you. And this acceptance of the temporary as the eternal is a turning away from Krishna. My intelligence is so crippled that I cannot find the strength to curb my mind. I mean, these are prayers that I identify with very strongly, which is disturbed by its material desires and activities. And constantly, my mind constantly drags me here and there by my obstinate senses. Being thus fallen, I approach your lotus feet for shelter, O Lord, because although the impure can never attain your feet, I think it is nevertheless possible by your mercy. Only when one's material life has ceased, O Lord, can one develop consciousness of you by serving your pure devotees. Obeisances to the Supreme Absolute Truth, the possessor of unlimited energies. He's the embodiment of pure transcendental knowledge, the source of all kinds of awareness. There are different living entities, and each living entity has its own level of consciousness. The trees are conscious, the bugs are conscious, the different humans are conscious on different levels, demigods, higher beings. And this consciousness is also awarded by Krishna, regardless of the level. It is a gift. Whatever knowledge, on whatever level, this is also awarded by Krishna. And you are the predominator of the forces of nature that rule over the living beings. O son of Vasudev, he's a person though. You are the son of Vasudev, but it's a Mathura person, Vasudev Krishna, he's worshipping. Obeisances to you, and this is the final verse in his prayers, within whom all living beings reside. We can't avoid it. We're in Krishna, but not in the most intimate chambers, because Krishna has not awarded us that consciousness, as for the reasons we spoke about yesterday. O Lord of the mind and senses, again I offer you my obeisances. O Master, please protect me, who am surrendered unto you. He wants to get out of the material world. And as he was offering these prayers, Lord Vishnu, situated in the water of the Yamuna, on Anantashesha, disappeared. And Akura walked out, as one would imagine, quite amazed and looking quite astounded. And he walked to the chariot, and you'll never guess who is still sitting on the chariot. It was Krishna and Balaram. And Akura looked at him. Krishna. And Krishna, in his unique, innocent way, said, "Oh, uncle, have you seen something wonderful? Was it on the earth, in the sky, or perhaps it might have been in the water? From your appearance, we think you've seen something like that." And Akura said, "Whatever wonderful things that there are to see, they are all within you. So now, looking at you, I'm seeing the most wonderful thing." Because even Vishnu is within you. the whole material, and there you are, seated on my chariot. But everything is within you. This is a Chintya Shakti. This is Krishna's potency. Advaitam Achyutam Anadya Ananta Rupam. Unlimited forms. Angani Yasya Sakalendriya Vrittimanti. Unlimited forms in each part of his form. Even though he's there with two arms and Krishna's holding a flute, perhaps each limb is unlimitedly powerful. This is Krishna. And this is inconceivable, ununderstandable to the material intelligence. Unlimitedly powerful. So powerful, so unlimitedly powerful that he can be unlimited and everywhere but still be in one place. Inconceivable Achintya Shakti, inconceivable potency. This is Krishna. And there he was sitting on the chariot. And then Akura, doing his duty, he got on the chariot and drove Krishna and Balaram to Mathura. And when they got to the gates of Mathura, Krishna said, I'm going to get down and wait outside. He didn't want to enter. And actually, when you read Krishna's entrance into Mathura, it's really wonderful. He's in his real hero mode. He's completely heroic. He doesn't care for anything. He says, please give me the clothes of Kamsa. And the washerman says, no. And Krishna just cuts off his head. Please give me some scent, some fragrance. And Kubja says, yes. And he straightens her out completely. And he doesn't care for Kamsa. He breaks the bow. He's really in his all-powerful hero mode. Now, Akura's prayers are so wonderful. They're so wonderful. But there's another pastime that took place in that very same place at Akura Tirtha. But there, the pastime that took place at the Yamuna, that lake of the Yamuna is called, does anyone know what it's called during the other pastime that took place there? Anyone? I'm going to think about it and see if anyone can read my mind. Any mind readers? Yes? No. It's called Brahma Riddha, or the Great Lake, or the Great Lake of Brahma, of the greatest, which is what literally what Brahma means. And in that place, Krishna, in a very, very interesting pastime, showed the residents of Vrindavan. He brought them in that place and brought them to the Brahman platform, the platform of oneness, of everything is one. In that place, in Akura Tirtha, Brahma Riddha. And the pastime takes place like this. So this is what Mahaprabhu is relishing. He's there. He wants to taste. He's relishing Akura's prayers. Because when we hear Akura's prayers, Akura's mood, when we grasp that very reverential, completely proper, completely pious, and also, it's very interesting that Srila Rupa Goswami says that Akura in Bhaktarasamrita Sindhu, Nectar Devotion, by offering those prayers, Akura attained perfection. But compared to the prayers or the activities or the love, because the prayers again are the external manifestation of the internal consciousness, and compared, they're exalted, Akura's prayers, but compared to the internal consciousness of the Brijbasis, there's one word that Sanatan Goswami uses to describe them. I won't tell you what it is, but I'll read it. He, in the four verses or so, Sanatana Goswami in Krishna Lila, Sri Krishna Lila Stava, he summarizes the Kuru's prayers. And then he says something at the end and tells his opinion about them from a very high platform. As the Kura, son of Svafalka, took his bath in the Yamuna, you, O Krishna, stayed on the chariot. Yet he saw you within the water, where you showed him astounding wonders. All glories, all victory to you. Akura prayed to you, O beginningless one, first cause of Padmanabha Brahma, your identity mystifies the created world, for only those who worship you can know you. Many kinds of sacrifice worship your feet. You have many names and many forms and many paths. They approach you, O great ocean, with rivers flowing into you from all directions. You are the Supreme Lord, in whom all demigods reside. All the limbs of your body form the foundation of the universe. Unlimited universes hide within your abdomen. By your many opulent incarnations, you destroy grief, you bestow bliss, and you expand your own fame. In various ways, Akura told of his own wretchedness and prayed to you with the hope of liberation. But when you bestow your greatest mercy, you give your prema bhakti and the company of saintly devotees. Your uncle Akura, O Krishna, spoiled by his neglect of the gopis, worshipped you with dry prayers. And you asked him to explain why he felt so surprised. From the level of piety, of religiousness, these prayers are so exalted, most exalted, full of truth, knowledge, and deep reverence for God. But from the point of view of the Braja Gopis, of the residents of Vrindavan, these prayers are dry. So just imagine how sweet and tasty, full of rasa, of juice, is the mood of the residents of Vrindavan. And therefore, the sweetness, the sweet tastiness of all their words and activities. So when Krishna spoke to Indra, Indra apologized to him. Why did Indra apologize? Because he had tried to kill all the residents of Vrindavan by showering torrents of rain upon them. And Krishna, of course, as we know, lifted Govardhan Hill. And then Krishna, knowing properly how to deal with such an exalted person such as Indra, brought him to a secluded place. He stayed in a secluded place, Govindakund, where Indra could come and find him and apologize in private. So Indra, the chief of the demigods, admitted his own pride in thinking that he was very powerful, and he's completely subordinated himself before Krishna. And the next demigod, who was going to have to admit his subordination to Krishna, was one of the demigods who's most glorified in the Vedas, and that is? That was before. The next one. No. Yes. No, but yes, it was Varuna. Because right after Indra, caused the lifting, the wonderful pastime of of the lifting of Giriraj. Bolo Giriraj Maharaj ki. Excuse me, I have a cough. Maybe some of you have coughs too. But Bolo Giriraj Maharaj ki. That was better, but not yet. Bolo Giriraj Maharaj ki. Bolo Giriraj Daran ki. Bolo Giriraj Daran ki. Thank you very much. So, after Indra caused this wonderful pastime of the lifting of Giriraj, and lightning bolts were striking Giriraj, but Giriraj was completely ecstatic because he was being touched by the finger of Krishna, that he didn't notice anything. So right after that, there was, I can't remember, it's known exactly what days everything took place. I think it was on the Gopastami, the eighth day of the moon, where Krishna put down the hill, I think, but I'm not 100% sure on this. And then right after that, there was an Ekadasi, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th day, there was Ekadasi. And then Nanda Maharaj always would observe Ekadasi. Always. He would fast on Ekadasi. And then this particular Ekadasi, the next day, there was a very short time period where the fast could be broken. And Nanda Maharaj, surrounded by his servants, went into the Yamuna to bathe, following the exact processes, religious processes. He went into the Yamuna to bathe exactly at the right time. But he was arrested taken by the servants of Varunadev and brought, because they had considered he had done something irreligious and bathed at an incorrect time. But actually, he hadn't. And actually, he was the highest. He was the embodiment. Nanda Maharaj was the embodiment of love for Krishna, of Shuddha Vatsalya Prema. There was no question of him doing anything irreligious, because religion's purpose, Vedeshtra Savara Aham Eva Vedyo, is to love, know Krishna and to love Krishna. And he was the embodiment of love for Krishna. But yet, the foolish servants of Varuna took him through a deep tunnel to the lower planetary systems. Sometimes it's called Rasatala, and sometimes Patala Loka, where the kingdom of Varuna was. And they brought Nanda Maharaj before Varuna. And how do you think Varuna felt? Embarrassed, something a little more intense, intimidated, something still more tense. And he was what? He could recognize by the phrenology of Nanda Maharaj that this is Krishna's father, by the face and by his features. He understood this was Krishna's father. Now, how do you think he felt? Remember, He was terrible, yes, he certainly felt terrible. Terrified, now that's more accurate. He was terrified because he understood that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he also understood that Krishna would not appreciate his father being brought into a terrifying situation, being brought through the waters, being kidnapped and chastised as if he had done something wrong. So Yamuna, so Varuna felt terrified, and he stood waiting outside the palace by the pathway, by this deep chasm pathway. Why? Because he knew Krishna was going to come, and he knew that Krishna, he wanted to see Krishna as quickly as possible, so he could fall down and pay his obeisances and beg Krishna forgiveness. He was full of fear. So that is what was happening from the point of view of within the water. So what did it look like from the point of view of the servants of Nanda Maharaj, who had brought him, because Nanda Maharaj was the personification of all religious principles. From the point of view of the servants who were watching this, what would it look like? Nanda Maharaj entered the water, and then the residents, the Varuna Dutas, grabbed him and took him down. What did it look like? It looked like he had drowned. And they all became mad with unhappiness and terror that Nanda Maharaj had drowned, because everyone in Vrindavan loved Krishna. But not only did everyone else love Krishna, they all loved each other, because this is what naturally happens when one loves Krishna. One has love for all living entities. What to speak of the most exalted other lovers of Krishna? It's dissatisfaction and unhappiness and emptiness, existential emptiness in our heart, that causes us to take it out on everyone else. To project our unhappiness on others. Atmavan manyate jagat. When we look out and see the world, we're seeing our own mind, practically speaking. So, from the outside point of view, these servants thought that Nanda Maharaj had drowned. And filled with crying and unhappiness, they ran back to where Krishna, Balaram, and Mother Yasoda and all the other residents of Vrindavan were, and they told them what had happened, and everyone started wailing, crying and crying. And they all ran. From what I read, it wasn't clear if they. I think they ran to the shore of the Yamuna. And Mother Yasoda was completely lifeless. And Mother Rohini was complaining. Like anything, how Balaram, how are you letting this happen? And Krishna said to Balaram, he took Balaram aside and said, I'm going to bring father back, but don't let Mother Yasoda see what I'm going to do. You keep Mother Yasoda away. Why did Krishna say this? Because what was Krishna going to do? He was going to enter in the water, and he was going to go down that chasm, that tunnel, and enter Varuna Loka. That's what he was going to be doing, and he knew what he would be doing, but what would it look like from the outside, from the top of the water? It would look like Krishna also had drowned. And what would happen to Mother Yasoda? She would drown in her own tears, and she would drown everyone else too. She would die. So Krishna told Balaram, please, you take them. I'll bring back father. So Krishna then assumed. He was very, very angry. Varuna was correct. He did not appreciate what had happened. He assumed a ferocious form, like the most powerful of lions. And he entered the water. And he entered that tunnel. And he went through that chasm. And he got to the kingdom of Varuna. And he called out, where is that jackal Varuna hiding? Where is that jackal hiding? What hole is he in? Krishna's complexion is usually what color? Shama, bluish. But at this time, it was red. Red hot anger. Varuna had taken Nanda Maharaj and placed him in a palace, kept him on a throne, knowing what was about to happen. And then when Krishna came, he immediately He immediately surrendered. Nanda Maharaj was near enough by that he could hear the words of Varuna. He immediately, there are verses in the Bhagavatam, I'll read those, three or so, not long verses. This is right before the rasa dance occurred. And it's interesting the way that Sukadev has placed all the pastimes. Also, they're very, very instructive, because we're going to, when the 29th chapter comes around of the 10th canto, we're going to hear about Krishna playing his flute and dancing with gopis, girls in the moonlight, and dancing and hiding from them and crying and performing intimate pastimes. We better really have it fully clear in our consciousness before we read that, who Krishna is, that the demigods are offering him obeisances and praising him and apologizing for anything that they have done incorrectly. That Akura's prayers are showing that everything is coming from him, even an illusion. Even though in the material world, the dancing of Krishna, the dancing of the boys and girls in the middle of the night in lonely places, that's one thing. But when Krishna does it, there is not the slightest trace of lust, even selfishness, kamendriya priti, krishnendriya priti. There is no lust, there is only love. Premanam. There is only love. The reflection. Urdhva. Yes. Urdhva mula adashaka. This material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. There's a resemblance of the reflection to reality, but there is no taste in the reflection. That's the difference. And what is high in reality, the top of the tree, is the lowest point in the reflection. So we must know these points. And the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, it goes back and forth continuously between glorifying Krishna's powers and potencies and then the most intimate loving leelas between the resonance of Vrindavan and Krishna that appear to be nara leela. They are like human, the activities of humans, but they are not. They are activities of the supermost human, who is Rasaraj. And again, the secret of all these activities, to understand them, is to understand that Krishna, the Supreme Lord, is increasing the ecstasy of his devotees, increasing their happiness, and their increasing his happiness. This is what's going on in Goloka Vrindavan. In the spiritual world in Goloka Vrindavan, whatever it appears to be, love is what is going on. True love. And in the material world, whatever it appears to be, lust is what's going on. Self-centeredness. So Varuna, most powerful of demigods, this is right before the Rasa Leela takes place in the 28th chapter. And this is the prelude to Brahma Riddha, that Mahaprabhu, there, he's relishing, he's thinking about these pastimes, he's tasting, he's, due to his heart, wanting to experience the ecstasies, he's feeling the deepest separation. This is the teachings of Mahaprabhu. And through that loving longing, he's entering into the pastimes and tasting them again and again and again. Seeing that the Lord Rishikesh had arrived, the demigod Varuna worshipped him with elaborate offerings, very, very carefully and seriously. Varuna was in a state of great jubilation upon seeing the Lord, because he was seeing the Lord. And he spoke as follows, "Now my body has fulfilled its function, indeed. Now the goal of my life is achieved, O Lord. Those who accept your lotus feet, O Personality of Godhead, can transcend the path of material existence." High prayers, like a chorus. "My obeisance is unto you,
the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Soul, within whom there is no trace of the illusory energy which orchestrates the creation of this world. Like a chorus, very knowledgeable prayers. And then he says, your father who is sitting here very close, who was brought to me by a foolish, ignorant servant of mine who did not understand his proper duty, therefore please forgive us. So Krishna then took Nanda Maharaj, as it said, he's right here. Nanda Maharaj was right there. He heard what Varuna's words, and Krishna was pacified. His ferocious feature was subdued. I'd like to read you something that I found very sweet. This is something that Srila Jiva Goswami has written. A little more in depth on this exchange. The moment Varuna perceived that Krishna had entered his abode, he rushed to greet and honor him. No one could even look at Krishna's form, which, although generally dark like a glistening cloud, was now red with anger. No one could look at Sri Krishna's eyes, which, although generally destroy the darkness of illusion, now glistened like lightning flashes that would blind anyone who dared look at them. Krishna's words were like the thunder that reverberated during the time of the cosmic destruction. Thus, like a cloud, lightning, and thunder, Krishna filled everyone in Varuna's court with wonder. One other point. But during this time, from the moment that Nanda Maharaj was captured by the associates, the servants of Varuna, what was he thinking? We've heard what the Brijbasis were thinking. We heard what the Varuna Dutas were thinking. We heard what Varuna was thinking. We heard what Krishna was thinking. What was Nanda Maharaj thinking? Oh, Krishna is so wonderful. My Lord Narayan is so wonderful that he's given me such a son like Krishna. What happened? Krishna, he killed that demon Putana by the mercy of Lord Narayan. And the Trinavarta demon, by the mercy of Lord Narayan, even though he tried to take Krishna far away and kill Krishna, Krishna was miraculously saved. And everyone in Vrindavan just simply loves Krishna. Who could not love Krishna? He's so beautiful. He's such a charming boy. He's so innocent. He was completely in the ecstasy, stunned, thinking about his son Krishna. And then Krishna enters. In what hole does that jackal Varuna hide? His great effulgence pained any eyes that would look at him. Frightened, Varuna let out the following stream of loud calls. He was calling out. He wrapped the cloth around his neck. He offered obeisances. His forehead touched the ground. He folded his hands and he fell down like a stick to the ground. And all the servants of Varuna also became afraid, frightened, and they fell to the ground as well. Krishna, his eyes were blossoming like a lotus flower. All attractive Krishna stood before Varuna and asked, "Where is my noble father, who is always intent on performing pious deeds?" And folding his hands, Varuna sweetly said, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, your noble Father, who is the best of all swan-like saintly persons, he's right here. He was not taken to another place. And then he offered the prayers that the Bhagavatam describes. My dear Krishna, Govinda, be merciful to me. Here is your Father. You can take him back immediately. I know your position is glorious. How can I disobey you? How can anyone impose his will upon you? In this way, Lord Krishna freed Nanda of all fear of being bound by Varuna's ropes. Nanda was in ecstasy. He was unconscious in his ecstasy, thinking of Krishna. But when Nanda Maharaj was brought right before Krishna, the fragrance of Krishna's body entered his nostrils. And Nanda Maharaj's eyes immediately opened and he awakened. And all the couriers in Varuna's kingdom were filled with wonder. And when Nanda Maharaj opened his eyes, do you know what he saw right in front of his eyes? The beautiful face, not Krishna, because he didn't think like that. He didn't see Vishnu. He didn't see Lord Narayan. He didn't see anyone but his son, right in front of him. And seeing Krishna's face right in front of his eyes, Nanda Maharaj burst into tears. And seeing Krishna through that film of tears, he thought, I must be dreaming. And what did Sri Krishna do? The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Narayan, Vishnu, what did he do? He bowed down and touched his father's feet. He hugged him and he picked him up and said, Father, I have come. Krishna and Nanda Maharaj were both overcome with emotion. Still, fearing the smiles and jokes of all the people around him, because the residents of that loka were on a completely different level. They weren't Brijabasis, they weren't residents of Vrindavan, they weren't allowed into the inner courtyard of reality of Krishna's heart. They were devotees. But they were the devotees who worship the king while the king is sitting on the throne. Yes, my master, my lord, what can we do for you? Please tell us your orders. We have to do this. They weren't allowed into the inner kingdom because their hearts didn't have the necessary hearts of that the residents of Vrindavan have. So Krishna Nanda Maharaj didn't. You can't hug your son and cry while you're in court. So Krishna told his father, who was going to do it anyway, please, Father, look around you. See where you are. And Nanda Maharaj, now, breaking his meditation on Krishna, that he was meditating on the whole time, and then being fully meditating on Krishna, because Krishna was, this is what the Brijbasis are like. When Krishna is in front of them, they're meditating on him. When Krishna is not in front of them, then they just go from one meditation to the next, to the next, to the next. They don't know if they're awake or sleeping or dreaming or, they're in love. Ananda thought, where are we? Father, we have traveled here, so we will return to our land of Braja. Don't think of anything else. Simply walk ahead, carefully moving the lotus flower of your feet. As Nanda and Krishna were about to depart, Varuna said in a voice choked with emotion, O Krishna, you are supremely merciful. Please give me one out of two things.
please give me either punishment or mercy. But do not, please, please do not let my offense to you remain unforgiven. Varuna then came before them. He placed many items at Krishna's lotus feet. He bowed before them. And when they reached the underwater passage, he opened the waters. And made a silk carpet so that Krishna and Nanda Maharaj could walk on dry land. And then, for one muhurta, 48 minutes, Varuna just danced in ecstasy because he had seen Krishna. So this is what was happening under the water, and on top of the water, the residents of Vrindavan. Krishna had gone in the water. Nanda Maharaj had entered the water. Krishna had entered the water, and everyone was dead, practically speaking. But then, when both of them, Krishna and Balaram, resurfaced, they saw all the people who were on the verge of death, all the Brijbasis, saw that Nanda, Krishna, and Varuna's servants suddenly and cheerfully appeared. And all the people in Braja, what do you think they did? They fainted. A whole town of fainted people. Except for one person, and that was Balaram. He approached Krishna and Nanda and hugged them. Balaram offered his obeisances, etc. And joyful Nanda hugged him. Balaram, when Nanda hugged him, he forgot everything, the world, because he was in such ecstasy. And then Krishna circumambulated his mother and he gave her the sweet nectar of his touch and brought her back to life. And then the next day, which is moving to the pastime, this was just introduction. The next day, also, Nanda Maharaj, what do you think all the other men, they went to Nanda Maharaj and said, what happened? What happened down there? What were you doing? And Nanda Maharaj said, Varuna Loka, we went to Varuna Loka, and it is such a nice place. It's so opulent. Everyone there loves and respects Krishna so much. And when Nanda Maharaj told the people of Vrindavan Varuna's words and how he respected Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all the Brijbasis being covered by yoga maya, they thought previously, we and everyone accepted the words of Gauga Muni, Narayana Samo Ganai, that your son, at the name-giving ceremony, Nanda Maharaj had asked Gauga Muni to perform the ceremony for Krishna at Krishna's birth and Balaram. And he said in a covered way, he wanted to tell them that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he didn't. He said, your son is Narayana Samo Guna. He has qualities equal to Lord Narayan himself. Anena Sarva Bhutani Yunjanasya Samahitam. You should protect this boy, he said. Because he'll save you from all difficulties and disasters. He's so nice. Gopayasya Samahitam. That you protect this boy. Samahita. So, the cowherd men, when they heard Nanda's words describing the words of Varuna, they said, previously we thought that your boy was equal to Narayan in qualities, but now, hearing what Varuna said, we think he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as soon as they thought, He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They thought, imitating the ways of ordinary people, they thought, I wonder, because we love him so much, and he loves us so much, what will happen to us after we leave this, after we die? Will we go to heaven? There in Goloka Vrindavan, the highest of highest, most innermost persons, but due to the nature of the of Yogamaya, they're thinking themselves ordinary people, and they're saying, what will happen to us after we die? Will your boy take us to heaven? Will we go to Vaikuntha? And others ask, can we go to Brahman? Will we get liberation? They're in Goloka Vrindavan, but due to the nature of the pastime, they're thinking like this. They're imitating the ways of the ordinary. So they said to Nanda Maharaj, what will happen to us? And Krishna, who knows everything, of course, knew their desires. And it will take me one moment to prepare this to make sure, because I want to read something, a little something. So then Krishna, because they wanted liberation and to know what Brahman is like, and to teach us readers of the Bhagavatam something, he brought them to Brahma Riddha, to Akura Tirtha. And this is the second pastime that occurred there. And when he brought them to Akura Tirtha, Brahma Riddha, he put all the cowherd men into the water there. And he gave them Brahman realization. He immersed them into Brahman so that they had no sense of personal identity. And no, that means no relationship with Krishna. And what do you think they thought? Excuse me? No? No? No. What do you think they thought? Huh? No, they didn't think separation from Krishna, because they didn't think anything. They were in Brahman. No. But immediately after putting him in Brahman, Krishna lifted them out. And then he brought them to a special place, Vaikuntha, because he wanted them to experience all the different levels of reality, to see what they, he was reciprocating with them, and so we would hear of the different levels of reality. And something will be told by this. And this happened in Akura Tirtha, where Mahaprabhu was staying. So he brought them to Vaikuntha next. Krishna brought them to Goloka, not Vaikuntha with Lord Narayan, but a special Vaikuntha where Krishna is there, but he's worshipped in all opulence. Krishna himself, not Lord Narayan, is there, but he's worshipped by all the sages, the demigods, etc. there. So let me just read. It's just very, very briefly described. It's just very, very few verses. I'll read just... So after that, Krishna understood the desires of the cowherd men. This is one of the shortest chapters of the Bhagavatam. 17 verses. So this is the 14th verse. Thus deeply considering the situation in which the cowherd men had desired to know what's going to happen to them, the all-merciful, Supreme Personality of Godhead revealed to the cowherd men his abode, which is beyond material darkness. He revealed the indestructible spiritual effulgence in this Brahma Riddha, Brahman, which is unlimited, conscious, eternal. Sages that see that spiritual existence in trance, when their consciousness is free, sages see that material existence in trance, when their consciousness is free of the modes of material nature. So this is what everyone wants, basically, from their religiosity, from their religiousness and spiritual life, just to escape the suffering of the material world. And who is in the center of everything when one wants to escape suffering? It's still me. Liberation. It's me. I'm in the center. I'm free from all suffering. So to show the differences between the different levels of realizations of spiritual life, Krishna gave them that. Freedom from that which tortures us. Passion, ignorance, and even goodness, which I cannot speak about. Then, the coward one were brought by Krishna to the Brahma Ridda, Kuratirtha, made to submerge in the water and then lifted up. And from the same vantage point that Akura saw the spiritual world, the coward men saw the planet of the Absolute Truth. Nanda Maharaj and the other coward men felt the greatest happiness when they saw that transcendental abode. They were specifically amazed. They were specifically amazed to see Krishna there, surrounded by the personified Vedas who are offering him prayers. So they saw Vaikuntha, and they saw Krishna there. And the personified Vedas, sages, etc., were praying to Krishna, and Krishna was accepting their prayers. Now, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and others have commented on this. I would like to read the comment of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. It's not very long, and you're being very patient, and your attentiveness is so high. And seeing that Vaikuntha, the coward men, became overwhelmed with the supreme bliss. This, it is implied, is because of their noticing that the Vrindavan present in the Goloka of Vaikuntha has the same nature as their own Vrindavan. And there's an example that it's hard for me to understand, but I'll read it as it is, and maybe you can understand it. This is just as a millionaire, sometimes as if a millionaire loses all his wealth, and then by chance he sees some token of his wealth and becomes overjoyed in supreme bliss. So I think the meaning is, my understanding of the meaning is, if a millionaire loses all his wealth and then sees a token, meaning a hint, of how he's going to get that wealth back, then he becomes again happy. So in this Vrindavan, Vaikuntha Vrindavan, the Brijbasis got a hint of, because Krishna was there and it was just like Vrindavan, they got a hint of how to get their real wealth back, and therefore they were really blissful. In the same manner as this, thus they were searching out for Krishna. Now, they were thinking, where is Krishna? Because they were in Brahman for a moment. Where is Krishna? A mere drop of perspiration from his lotus face is more worthy of homage than thousands of lives. Then they saw him, as stated by the word Krishnam in the verse. Seeing Krishna present there, being praised by the personified Vedic hymns, they became most astonished. Indeed, they thought, where are we? Where are we? All these effulgent personalities are offering prayers. We have never seen such persons in Vrindavan. But who are they? Who are we? And they have such a demeanor such a presence that we're afraid, because they're the personified Vedas, we're afraid to come close to them. To ask them even who they are. And in the midst of all of these praying Upanishads is our Krishna. Yet, even looking, they can't understand what's going on because Krishna is looking at them. His parents and other relatives, and he's not manifesting his usual childish, naughty behavior. Neither does he come near to us. He doesn't take our necks within his arms. We feel embarrassed to approach him and place him on our laps. And how is it that we are now forgetting the disturbance of hunger and thirst? And how would Mother Yasoda be able to tolerate this situation and not be able to feed Krishna? How would she maintain her life? They were exhibiting this type of surprise. The lesson of this story, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, is explained by Srila Rupa Goswami in one short verse of the Stavamala, and then we'll have a break. May Lord Mukunda grant you his protection. There is no realm more charming than his forest of Vrindavan. He with ease revealed to his relatives and friends the planet of Vaikuntha. And after revealing it fully to them, he again returned them to the cowherd pastures of Vrindavan. There is no place like home. There is no place like Vrindavan. My dear devotees, even when confronted with the opulence of Krishna in Vaikuntha, even when confronted with all the Vedas worshipping Krishna, the affection of the residents of Vrindavan did not diminish even the slightest bit. This is Vrindavan. The affection of the residents of Vrindavan is so glorious. It is so powerful. It is so intimate. It is so unique that it completely captures Krishna. It completely controls the all-powerful Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki! Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki! Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki! Okay. The bestower of transcendental happiness. Serve the divine young couple with a devotion-filled heart. Alas, when will you bestow mercy on this fallen servant? Speaking in this way, shed tears and lament while wandering about the solitary places of Vrindavan. May my head eternally bow down to Sri Vrindavan. May my tongue become overwhelmed by singing the transcendental glories of Vrindavan. May my hands engage in cleansing the fresh groves of Vrindavan. May my legs engage in circumambulating the land of Vrindavan. May my ears engage in hearing the glories of Vrindavan. My eyes in seeing the beauty of Vrindavan. And my mind on meditating on Vrindavan. Alas, when will that day come when I will wander through the groves of transcendental Vrindavan day and night with intense longing?
I will search everywhere for the most enchanting divine couple, Radha and Krishna, who appear like gold and blue sapphires. Remembering their lordships, I will forget everything, including my eating, sleeping, drinking, and bathing. When will I give up shyness and sometimes sing loudly, dance in ecstasy, laugh loudly, roll on the ground, run swiftly, and cry in lamentation, and fall unconscious to the ground for not being able to see the Lord? And sometimes, when will I be overwhelmed due to love of God? Alas, when will I spend my days in Vrindavan in this way? I will forget about worldly morality. I will forget about adoration, blasphemy, happiness, distress, maintenance of my body and house, and wander alone in the forest of Vrindavan, being intoxicated by drinking the honey of love of God. I will reside in Vrindavan like I am influenced by some graha planet. When will that state come to me when I will not be bound by the reactions of any activities? Rather, I will spend my days being absorbed in my own mood. When will my heart become satiated by chanting in Vrindavan the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, which the most merciful Sri Chaitanya Dev personally chanted and distributed to the fallen souls out of his compassion? These holy names of Sri Hari are mixed with the mellows of love. They are full of spiritual energy and glorious. This is from what book? Vrindavan Mahimamrita by His Holiness Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur. I think we're just waiting till Maharaj comes. So any questions? Please, simple questions. What is the significance? Well, the significance is that he stayed there. That's the real basic one. What is the significance of Mahaprabhu staying in Akuragat? The different levels of looking at things, the Leela level is the highest and most sublime. It was on the borderline between Mathura and Vrindavan forest, and there these two pastimes happened. It was secluded, but in Vrindavan it was just a forest at that time. It was very secluded, completely secluded. But in Akuragat, there were not many people. In Akuragat, those two pastimes happened. And what I noticed as I looked at them, as came clear, I believe, when we heard those pastimes, is that there are different ways to worship Krishna, different moods. But the supreme mood, clearly, is the mood of the residents of Vrindavan, because the sweetness of their love predominates and overpowers everything. Even they may know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, still their love overpowers that knowledge. Okay, since Maharaj is here, we'll stop here. Bolo Giriraj Maharaj Ki! Now that, you didn't say that in a serious way. Because the mind is here and there. Please. Bolo Giriraj Maharaj Ki! Bolo Giriraj Maharaj Ki! Bolo Giriraj Maharaj Ki! Jai Jai Shri Ram! Jai Jai Shri Radhe! Jai